Welcome to China Manufacturing Decoded from Sofeast, the podcast where we take you through some of the major topics facing importers and manufacturers in China today. Hi listener, welcome back to the podcast, episode 37 today, and you're on board with Adrian from Sofeast, and today I'm joined by Andy Bartlett, who is a UK-based new product development expert with decades of experience in the industry, who is going to be talking with me about managing your new product development project with Chinese suppliers, and this could be factories or development houses over there in China. So his experience of how best to manage the project management, some of the best practices, some things to look out for, how to protect your IP, your CAD data, some cultural aspects that you might not be aware of, all from his unique perspective as a product developer and designer. I'm excited to hear what he had to say, so let's get started.
Hi, Andy. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi. Thank you. No problem.
So, Andy, just before we get stuck into the topic of keeping up good project management when you're dealing with Chinese suppliers, could you just introduce yourself a little bit first?
Yeah, sure. So I've been a product designer for 25 or so years, and I studied product design at university many, many years ago, and have worked in lots of different areas or industries, consumer electronics, toys, and recently, again, going back to personal electronics and FMCGs. So lots of different perspectives and experience, I guess, using lots of different suppliers who operate in lots of different ways.
Brilliant. That's perfect. Well, I can't wait to get into this then and really pick your brains on the topic that I mentioned. Now, just before we started talking, you mentioned there are sort of two outlooks when we talk about the sort of project management that I just mentioned a minute ago. So what are those that we're going to be covering today?
I guess the first way of engaging with the Chinese suppliers is if you're when you're talking directly to the contract manufacturer. So these are the guys that are going to do, they're going to take your product from the concept, however well developed that concept is. It might be a very early idea and it might be a pretty well-formed one. And dealing and talking with them and going through the development process, making sure that everything that you need to deliver in the final product is being looked after and you're going to be happy. And then the second one is dealing with a development house who may well be working on your concept and be fleshing it out and exploring a lot more different options, manufacturing techniques, processes, finishing process, and things like that. And they do take a slightly different different approach because they have very different, both groups, the development house and the factory, have slightly different needs, I guess, and require slightly different things from you as a designer.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good. It makes a lot of sense. So if we can start then by discussing when we're dealing with the factory. So could you talk me through that from your perspective?
Yeah, sure. First of all, I think as the as a designer or doing the project management, I think the biggest challenge that you've got is to maintain quality, to maintain design intent and design quality. So you may know very clearly what the market expects from a quality perspective and what the consumer wants and the level that they that they're at. And many times the factory will not understand that. It may be if they're a generalist manufacturer, they may have lots of experience with lots of different industries, but all of them will have different ideas about quality and about finishes and the kind of user experience for the product. So as a designer, what you need to do is first of all protect those interests and have a very clear idea about what you want to achieve. The second challenge is often the factory will be very busy. And your contact within the factory, if you have a single contact, will also be very, very busy with lots of projects. Often they'll be juggling multiple developments at the same time. Mm-hmm. So the second thing that you can bring to the conversation is structure, organization, and a very well-controlled communication channel. And often questions have to be asked several times. Often they're ignored through or forgotten through a sort of barrage of daily emails and firefighting on both ends. And so being very structured and being very ordered and being very consistent in your communication is something that is really valuable and will really, it's an overlooked skill, actually. It really does contribute to the end product. You know, we're designers, and if you're from the creative side, this is the thing that you believe will make your product wonderful, is bringing your creative thinking. But there's the old adage about 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration, and the perspiration is really important, and that comes when dealing with factories with clear, consistent communication and following up on questions in a very organized manner.
Right. And how about with the development house?
The development house, I guess when you're working with the development house, it's more about exploring and managing cost, managing schedule, and exploring opportunities. So when you're working with a development house, they will often see more opportunities than the factory will in the first instance, not least because exploring is very time consuming and costs money. So often a factory will be motivated to get you to the solution that's perhaps nearest and easiest and cheapest, and actually that might not be quite what you want. And products often suffer from a kind of attrition through development, and if you're not careful, I mean, the phrase of death by a thousand cuts is quite dramatic, but quite apt, actually, because you know, through lots of small decisions that don't contribute to the end quality, you can actually lose the magic of your product. So when you're talking to the development house, it's all about managing the expiration and making sure that you can still get to the factory in time for them to make it in time for your schedule, your master schedule, but also having a little more freedom to explore and play, actually, I think is quite an important thing to do.
Well, I suppose the factory, in their mind, often with a Chinese factory, perhaps they're just really wanting to drive that project towards mass production to get those products made and shipped.
Yeah, absolutely. That is their focus. And I mean, and I think and that's absolutely right. That's what they need. That's what you want them to do. But what you need in along the process is a healthy tension between all of the aspects of product development. So time, on time, on cost, and on specification. Yeah, and they are often at odds with each other. So it's absolutely fine that the factory want to get to production quickly. Creative people will never rarely know when the time is right to stop development and go to production. So it's a tension that exists everywhere, but that's part of the chemistry, if you like, of product development, and part of what you need to be comfortable experiencing and managing yourself.
So with your sort of developer hat on, let's say we are dealing with a factory and we've been doing the product development, at what point would you say your designs and the information that the factory need is going to be mature enough for you to actually, you know, press the go button?
Well, that's an interesting question, and will be influenced by lots of things. You may be an individual representing basically yourself and maybe a couple of others in a sort of entrepreneurial environment. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, you may not have a marketing department to go to, but often many of the visual and user experience elements will need to be approved by the marketing team. So that would be the first hurdle to get over, signing off, generating samples, and mock-ups and prototypes to get them to approve. But if you're more if you're more of a small organization and doing most of that stuff yourself, you need to verify the design with a prototype, and of course that varies from development to development, but often will be a functioning prototype and a visual prototype, and or one that does both, and that needs to be verified from a you need to verify against your initial product specification. And once you've got that and you've got buy-in from tool makers and the supply chain that they can deliver that, that's probably the time that you need to check in with yourself and make sure that you're not that whatever you do after that point is adding value to the end product, or that you need to be more disciplined with yourself and say this is good enough to go. We design is an iterative process, and the loops that we go through, or the cycles that we go through, can be revisited quite late on in the project. So even tool start obviously is treated as a significant gateway in the product development, and changes that happen after tool start become increasingly long and expensive. But there is a degree of kind of 95% done with 5%, still left to do, and that's okay too, and that can be very uncomfortable for some people, especially if you're an engineer from an engineering perspective. But having an agile approach where you review on a regular basis, then that should also be borne into consideration also.
There comes that point in the process where you've got to, pull the pin on the tooling, for example, and yeah. I guess that can be quite a nerve-wracking point because of the costs and everything.
Yeah, it's the worst time actually. Approving to tool start is the worst time, because it's the days up to pressing the button are the most busy days of the project. And then suddenly your little baby goes into an abyss and goes away for 4 weeks, 6 weeks, however long, while the tool's being made. And there's not much to do, really. From, you go from the busiest time to the quietest time. Mm. And so it's a really, it's an interesting gateway, that one. And always nervous. But over time, you kind of learn to just park your any major, or if you don't have major concerns, but any concerns that you may have, any little niggles, they need to be parked for the next 4 weeks until you can actually address and be proactive with them. So it's a tough time.
Mm. So if we consider, let's say, a hardware startup, and assuming that this particular organization is maybe not the most experienced, they've either got the option to work with a factory who is perhaps primarily going to be focusing on the manufacturing and assembly side, maybe not getting so involved with product development. Or of course there's the other route of working with an organization who is actually going to help develop the products, whether they do the assembly as well or not is of course possible. So what would be your recommendation for the best practices that this kind of organization might follow when working with these guys?
So for me, that's a great question, because for me, if you're choosing a development house to work with, and in fact even when you're working with the factories, but particularly the development house, there's a couple of things you need to the most important thing, I think, is about building a relationship. Product development is never smooth. Every project we start, we always think when we look at our Gantt chart, we always imagine that it's going to be a linear process, and that if we do things properly, there will be no bumps in the road. But I've never worked on one that had no bumps. So if you start from the premise that this is a tough process, right? Doing something new by nature is unknown. There are unknowns. So you plan for that. You expect the worst and plan for it. But the point is that it's when things are tough that you rely and fall back on good working relationships. So for me, establishing good working relationships or finding someone that you believe you can work with from a day-to-day perspective, so that when we all make mistakes, when things don't go smoothly, we've got something to fall back on, which is a very human thing, actually. And product development is about working with people. It's the most important thing. So for me, choosing a development house that has good communication, that has someone there that you feel you can work with, and when it gets a bit tough, that you trust and you're able to build a relationship where they trust you as well. And that's really, really important. Now, obviously, it depends on the factory. The factories can be more difficult to find that person, that window person. But communication is key, and building relationships are key. And for me, you know, that's the starting point for choosing who you go with. I'm very lucky. I've done it many years. I have people that I know I can go to. But you know, every relationship that you start with a new supplier, it is a risk that we should be very, very, very wary of, and take our time to find that person. And so cost obviously is very, very important. You know, technical skill is very, very important. You know, the ability to explore. I mean, that's the other thing, is through that connection, I think as a designer, you connect with people who have that can-do spirit of exploring, because that's what product development can often be, is about saying, I don't quite know whether we can do this, but I think we can, and let's go try. So you need that on both sides. So you can have that, but you'll be really frustrated if the group that you engage with to help you doesn't share that kind of vision. And I guess that's important. So it's all about relationships, and it's all about building them. And hopefully, you know, I mean, why not to develop long-term working partnerships, because they're the best, definitely.
It's funny that you speak about the communication and the relationships at this point, as we're recording, you know, in early 2021, and with the inability to go to China or other Asian countries, I suppose, the technique and the knack of being able to really assess who you're talking to and their abilities to, you know, work with you and to really get what you're trying to do, in a way, I suppose that's kind of become more difficult, but even more important.
Yeah, definitely, absolutely. As every aspect of our life's been touched by these new challenges, the challenges that we've experienced over the last 12 months, that's certainly we've I think everybody's got better, haven't they, with communicating through video conferencing and using technology, and that's been a real silver lining for sure. The one thing I'd like to add to that is, whilst you know, you can connect with people really, really, really surprisingly well and efficiently, you know, compared to, I don't know, traveling a few hours to cross from Hong Kong to China, or traveling a few days to go from the UK or the US or wherever you're from to Hong Kong to China, you know, however you're physically traveling, you know, the video conferencing is really effective, you know. There is no doubt that being in person is absolutely the best, way of dealing and working and building that team and that vision with your development chain. But video conferencing can be pretty good too. And the one thing I wanted to add though is, I'll try and choose my words very carefully. When you have even face-to-face development meetings, the predominant culture within the organization that you're visiting, whether it's a development house or a factory, will be to say yes. to everything that you request. And yes often doesn't mean yes. It means it can mean many things. It can mean yes, of course, but it can mean I don't know, and I need to go and look. I need to go and do some exploring. So what we need to do is be very careful when we are briefing, particularly development engineers, is to follow that with the written word in whatever format you want to use.
Yeah.
And there are lots and lots of tools available to us in terms of tracking issues, open issues, development issues. There are lots. And I've tried lots. And there are technical issues. A lot of the Google products don't work on mainland China, but they do in Hong Kong. And
yeah.
So that's a barrier. That can be a barrier. But my experience actually is you can build your own systems in terms of bug tracking and communication and making sure that I talked earlier on about being tenacious and consistent and with your communication. Emails are good, but they're very ignorable. So you need to work a system out whereby you can track and keep yourself sane, particularly as a project becomes more and more complex, to manage those issues. And frankly, Word and Excel or Google Docs or whatever, they can do a really good job. You don't need fancy project management software. That is my experience. You often will have a much prettier interface and a few bells and whistles, but you very often find you come up against limitations. And I've tried lots, and there always seems to be limits. And I keep going back to the really simple idea of keeping great notes after conversations. Creating tables and spreadsheets to help you control and manage a volume of different avenues that have been discussed, and to go back and keep checking up with your development engineer so they know that when you ask something, you're not just asking it and it's not important. They know that you're going to come back, and so they will act. It's a really good way of keeping on top of your communication, keeping a gentle, firm, but not pushy, a gentle firm pressure on the supply chain to make sure they come back. And even if the answer is no, you need to know it's a no. Don't assume. And there are many times I've seen stuff slip and not happen, and you get to the point where an issue is too late to be resolved, and it could have been solved with very simple regular communication. And just a little note on that, I always think of when we have discussions with the development engineers and they say yes or no and we'll come back to you, I think you always should look at your time management and say you should allow in your day time to basically to use words of from today, track and trace the discussions that you've had. Once a discussion has been completed, it is efficient to spend 10 minutes making a few notes that you can come back to tomorrow, next week, next month, and chase and follow and push. In our busy schedules, it always feels that we should move on to the next thing. And the more that we do, we feel that the more productive we are. But actually, taking time out at the end of an engagement, however, video conference or telephone call or face-to-face meeting, making a really good set of notes. It's a discipline. It's a pain in the butt sometimes, but it keeps paying off, in my opinion. And I think that's a really mature and efficient way of where possible of an efficient tool to help you manage the design through its development process.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I'm really interested in these wise words. I think for people who are maybe new to working with Chinese organizations as well, it's really going to help set them on the right course.
Another sort of parallel to that communication and that idea of pausing and reflecting and recording is CAD data, and it might seem a weird link segue there, but often if you're in a designer and you're doing the project management, you will be invariably be generating CAD and handing it over to either a development house or to the factory. Now, oftentimes, I mean, this is oftentimes their modeling will be, they may be modeling in a different package. And so you may be swapping neutral file formats like IGIS or STEP or whatever. And even if you're using the same software, they will not model the way that you will. You will, as a development engineer, starting from the base, you'll probably build your models, your 3D data up in a way that's very editable, that's stable, that doesn't fall over. And when it goes across, basically the engineer on the other side will probably be just doing it as quickly as they can. So you lose the integrity of the modeling. And why do I mention that? Well, sometimes what you need to do after, it may be after only a short period of time, maybe a couple of weeks, sometimes you have to stop and start your model again and get it to the point where it is at the moment, but it might just be a really flaky model and it might need to be. So don't feel, you know, bring that approach of pausing and reviewing to your 3D data as well. Because until you're really late on in the process, you're still going to be working on it. You're still going to be editing it. And what you don't want to do in the pressure cooker of a panic later on in development is have a model that just falls over all the time and it's unusable. So adapting a kind of flexibility to your modeling, and then also this kind of this tax that you can apply, that for every, you know, week that that model exists, there's going to be a few hours that you need to go back and remodel. And that feels like a waste of time, but it could be a really good investment later on down the line. That's just right. Something that I've found.
Yeah, yeah, good. Okay. And to keep looking at the transfer of information, I mean, from your perspective, does the protection of intellectual property also come into this? I mean, how in your mind do you deal with that? Is that a concern?
It's context driven for sure. So when you're in a stable, established relationship, you know, this idea of trust exists, and the longer that you work with a supplier, you know, you understand intuitively their integrity when it comes to how they discuss other their other clients. And you know that if you're working with someone who regularly maybe does things that you wouldn't want them doing with your information, you should be cautious with those people, and as best you can protect yourself with of course NDAs are important, but really, you know, you want to avoid, of course, you want to avoid people that you haven't got that fundamental trust with. And a great one is walking through a factory, you know, oh, can I have a look at this? And if, you know, it's a really good site. I love going to a factory where someone says, no, you can't, sorry, we can't show you that. You know, I love that. Not because I can't see what I want to see, but because they are clearly taking their other clients' confidentiality very seriously, which is a good sign that they might be taking it with yours. And if you have people that sort of easily flag that, just be very careful. But it's all about building relationships. So, yeah, in the long term, when I visit new factories, you need to be very, very careful, very careful, and take a position, a very kind of defensive position on it, and assume no trust until you can build that rapport. And that's and I think that's just the right thing to do. So just be very careful. The Chinese, it's a really interesting thing. When I deal with factories that introduce me to other suppliers, you know, their culture is based around introduction and recommendation. And, you know, once you have this hub of maybe one or even several companies that you trust, they generally work with other people that they trust too, and are happy to introduce you to them, both that they know that they're going to be a good supplier for you, but also their suppliers, they know that you're going to be a good customer. So that's a really nice way through recommendation, which is a very prevalent system that's in place, a cultural system in place, to protect yourself. And going back to, I'm not sure whether you were linking the the confidentiality with the CAD, but just a note on that. You know, be very careful about who you share CAD to. And, you know, there are plenty of ways of sharing 3D data without exposing yourself too much to copying or plagiarism or illicit sharing of your data. And that's with any of the multitude. I mean, we use eDrawings. There are plenty of other ones out there which give limited information. You can lock it down and make it impossible to measure. And actually what you can do with that data is pretty limited. So that's a good sort of halfway house. If you're not sure, is to keep that, keep the amount of data that you share to the absolute minimum through a sort of viewer type bit of software. I find that's good.
Yeah, good. Okay. What other points would you share at this point, Andy, do you think?
Well, I talked earlier on a little bit about relationships, didn't I? And I think building relationships has been the most useful thing that I've learned in my career, anyway. And that maintaining your cool, maintaining calm, and maintaining respectfulness to whoever you're engaging with and dealing with, even when you may feel justified to be something other than calm, it is a very, 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 very valuable skill, and really hard sometimes. but often, you know, when we're dealing with people who are embedded within other organizations, we have no idea what their structure, what the pressures they're dealing with, what the organization is saying to that person. So it's always very, very prudent to maintain that control. And when things are tough, just to, I mean, the adage of taking it, you know, never sending an email in anger is a really good one. I mean, it's, you know, writing it and then coming away from it. And often you come back and, without being too philosophical, you realize that when you say stuff in the heat of the moment, you're actually damaging yourself, which is the last thing you're trying to do. You're trying to get your point across, right? So that, you know, particularly when you cannot have dinner with the guys, when you cannot shake their hands, when you cannot look around and see how busy they are, you have to have a kind of an enormous capacity for patience. As I said, because this is not easy. Product development is not easy. Obviously, some products are easier than others to develop. But, you know, pulling together so many different people from so many different, with so many different skill sets to deliver something, often in challenging timescales and to challenging cost limitations, is hard. And so that should always be remembered. And most, you know, 99% of the time, I would say, in my experience, whoever you're dealing with is doing the best that they can in under their own set of limitations, whatever they are.
And I think there's a cultural element to that as well, because I mean, in my experience, when you lose your rag with the Chinese, they tend to shut down. It's not really a very conducive to making any progress, because they kind of just stop listening. It's just not how people communicate in China, particularly.
For sure. It's just not in there. It's not in their toolkit to be confrontational. Certainly in an email chain that's got six different people copied on it, you know, that's just, you know, it is about, well, obviously it's a group mentality, you know, you know, Americans and Europeans can often find that quite frustrating, but that's a general embedded culture. I don't want to be too sweeping in saying that a whole nation is like that, but they are general sort of themes in communication. And of course, you know, different people will have different personalities, and so will be more comfortable with more confrontation than others, and others will run away and others will run to it. But you know, there is the general approach is that. And I mean I've worked with American companies as well, and with long established contacts in China, I know that they really bristle at the sort of forthright, less guarded approach that you can get with some American corporate cultures in particular, you know. And ultimately, if your goal is to get your product developed the best one that you can at the best price that you can get it within at the quickest time, you know, it may well be very counterintuitive to adopt a sort of approach of going in swinging.
Well, if a lot of water's already gone under the bridge as well, in terms of, you know, going through the new product development process, and you're edging closer towards the time to go to production, you don't want to upset the apple cart at that point.
No. And the other thing that I'd say is when you're developing a product, the factory has to commercially make their money back on the first order. They have to assume, they have to cover everything on the first order. Now, obviously, most of the time you're going to expect to repeat order, okay? So it's the first order is really hard, because it's where all the work goes. When you do your second order, you might tweak the product, you might tickle it, you might polish it, you might have found out something in the marketplace that isn't quite what you want, so you can change it. But you know, you may be looking at like 10% effort on the second order, so the first one's really hard, and it's where things get stressed and strained the most. And the second order is a delight, isn't it? Because you know, you're just reordering. You may change color, you may change packaging, but you know, let's just say 10% of the effort that you went into place for is the second one. So just whatever you do in the first order, remember, you're going to order again, and then it's just going to get easier. And of course, we're continually developing, but you know, it is the time when it often gets better the longer you go and the more product you develop, I think.
Yep. Great. Okay. Well, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with me, Andy, as an experienced product developer. It's been so interesting to hear some of the best practices that go into actually managing product development and manufacturing project when we're dealing with Chinese suppliers. That's been really amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I think for me, the biggest takeaway is, you know, if you are a designer, if you do get passionate about product, which of course you wouldn't be doing it if you weren't, but you're passionate about your product, and you know, it is literally 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. So it, you know, just bring that discipline and calmness to your development is a really valuable and useful tool, I think, and all the creative stuff is good as well.
Yeah, really, really strong message to close us out there. That's really great. Cool. So yeah, brilliant. Thanks for catching up with me, Andy.
No worries. Thanks, Adrian.
Thanks for joining us. If you've enjoyed today's podcast, don't forget to like and share, and you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other places that you get your podcasts from. See you next time.